This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As an anthropologist and naturopathic doctor, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know these kind of women. They are people kind of like you. Before we jump into the interview, I want to invite you to join our free Facebook community, Legacy. If you want to be something amazing, you need to surround yourself with amazing people. The Legacy community is made up of badass women living, not leaving, but living our legacy every single day. We are leaders, parents, entrepreneurs, and innovators collectively committed to leaving the world better than we found it. My mission is to support the health and optimization of these badass superheroes, literally to places we never thought imaginable. If you are on a mission and get it that your health is the key to your unlimited potential, then join us. We are super awesome. You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/groups/BE Legacy. See you there. Did you know that more than 30 million Americans, that is the entire population of Canada, that many people, stateside and obviously extrapolated around the world, suffer from fatigue and body-wide chronic pain? That fatigue and this end manifestation, in particular a condition called fibromyalgia, is the end stage of leaving your body and your nervous system fully unrestored. It often is associated with a trauma or severe stress early on, and the constant pressures and go, go, go that we do to our body create these end stage manifestations. Today, I had the chance to sit down and talk with David Brady. Dr. Brady is an expert on fibromyalgia, cellular fatigue, which quite frankly is the number one thing women cite as being the issue that they would most like to restore and change about your health. We got into the daily habits that you can engage in to maximize your energy. We also talked about the types of patterns that he sees in his clinical practice that are so common to people who are ending up with these chronic fatigue or chronic fibromyalgia type pictures. This is a fascinating interview if you want to understand how to tap into and access more energy on a daily basis. It is not the things that you are thinking of in terms of being able to access more energy. And these are often things that you can do easily in your own life. Here he is, Dr. David Brady. Dr. David Brady, it is such a pleasure to have you on the Entrepology Podcast. Thanks so much for being here.
Hey, thank you. And thanks for inviting me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So can you tell me a little bit about your story and the journey that brought you to a place where you're working with patients related to global pain syndromes such as fibromyalgia? It's such a niche area and an area that's underserviced. I'm sure there's a really good story about how you got there.
There is, but that would take up the whole hour, but I'll try to be brief. I guess it's a big part of my practice. It's certainly not only the only thing I do, but I do see a large number of patients with global pain and fatigue disorders and fibromyalgia, or at least a fibromyalgia diagnosis. And I've dedicated a lot of my career to that, both in research and publishing and in clinical practice as well, probably out of sheer desperation, honestly, because in my initial training, before I went to medical school and had, you know, my advanced nutrition training and so forth, I first went to school to train to be a chiropractor. And so, you know, real musculoskeletal, kind of biomechanical based kind of education. It dovetailed good with my previous education in undergrad, which was as an engineer, as an electrical engineer. But I really thought I was going to go into biomechanics research and kind of apply my engineering to the human condition instead of computers and all the other stuff I was doing. And I took a left turn along the way where I went to train. My mentors and influencers were really what you would call modern day naturopathic medical doctors. They were tremendous clinical nutritionists. They used botanical medicine and they used lifestyle medicine and a lot of interventions that are part of what we, you know, the modern sort of integrative functional and naturopathic medicine paradigm. So that opened my eyes up to different possibilities. And when I first got out of that training, I started seeing these patients that came in saying they have fibromyalgia. And that was, 25 years ago. So back in the day where it was really looked upon as a junk diagnosis and that, a lot of doctors didn't think it was real or a real entity. A lot of the patients were really looked down upon and made to feel silly for even suggesting such a thing. And I realized really quickly I didn't know enough about this. And, what I was trained at the time about fibromyalgia was very little. What I was told was sort of with that same bent of, we don't know if this thing is real or not, or if it's just people being, hysterical or hypochondriacs or whatever. But, being that the default, in the chiropractic world is things are physical, they're problems with the somatic structures. My concept was this was a muscle problem, this because it causes muscle pain, right? It was a myofascial problem and that you can use physical medicine to try to resolve it. You can massage it, you can do deep tissue work, you can use electrical muscle stim or ultrasound or manipulation or stretching or whatever and get it better. And I quickly realized that was not the case. There were certainly a subset of patients that came in saying they had fibromyalgia or thought they did, that when you did all that functional medicine or physical medicine stuff, they responded and got better. But then there was this other subset. They were not getting better. There's no way they were getting better. And I knew they were not making it up. These were not people who were looking for an excuse to be ill. They really had problems and they were frustrated and actually angry because they were being left behind in the medical system. And I realized quickly this was not a muscle problem. I mean, they had depression, they had anxiety, they had unrefreshed sleep, they had irritable bowel syndrome. They had all these hypersensitivity symptoms as we know them today as a hypervigilance syndrome. And it was not a muscle problem. It was much bigger than that. So I basically had to go back and make myself an expert on it. And I found a kindred spirit in a colleague who him and I were teaching some myofascial, therapy kind of seminars. And we both came to the same conclusion. He was a very bright guy, Dr. Michael Schneider, who's now a NSF NIH funded researcher at the University of Pittsburgh. He went on to get his PhD. And he's also an expert in fibromyalgia. And we went on this journey together in basically making ourselves experts, starting to publish, starting to do research, reaching out to all the world experts, reading every single, paper that was out there in the index medical literature, all the textbook chapters, and contributing ourselves to trying to make healthcare providers, doctors, other clinicians know more about this disorder that they were just ill-equipped to deal with. So because they were ill-equipped to deal with it, their ego made them sort of blow the patient off or give them therapies that were just not appropriate for them. So I basically made myself an expert over time. And then clinically, over 20 plus years, I've seen thousands of patients to sort of refine the craft on how to deal with these difficult folks. And but it really was out of desperation because I realized I didn't know what I was doing.
Right. And it's amazing how when you start to treat those people who are outliers or medical refugees because they just can't get the care that they want, how it sort of forces you to put on that new lens and get your hands dirty and get in there and just learn it. And I want to get into what fibromyalgia is because I think there'll be some people who are totally familiar with that term and other people go, oh, this is new, I haven't heard of that. But right. But backing up and really understanding this audience, and we have got entrepreneurs and go-getters and people who just drive. And you said in there, the spectrum with fibromyalgia and fatigue disorders. What is the spectrum of fatigue disorders? Because I think most of us listening are going, I am fatigued. Is this an actual disorder or am I just caught in that phase of life? What is a fatigue disorder?
Well, fatigue is a very, very, very common complaint or symptom, right? If you look at the presenting complaints or symptoms to ambulatory care providers, at least in the United States, where we have pretty good data on that I've seen, fatigue, lack of energy, lack of vitality is always ranked in the top three. There's upper respiratory tract infections. The second one is usually some level of somatic pain, like muscle pain, joint pain, something like that. And right up there is fatigue. And with something like fibromyalgia, you're combining two of the most common symptoms, right? Pain and fatigue, and a whole bunch of other symptoms that are also very common. But there are many things that can cause fatigue. And it, certainly there's a lot of people with ongoing or what we would say chronic fatigue that it has nothing to do with fibromyalgia. Fibromyalgia is frequently linked when people talk about it in the literature or write about it with chronic fatigue syndrome. And they're very different things. They have very different diagnostic criteria, and they really should not be lumped together. Although it is true that almost 100% of patients with fibromyalgia do have ongoing fatigue of chronic nature, but it's not necessarily chronic fatigue syndrome. The average person out there, particularly like you're saying, the go-getter, the overachiever, the person burning the candle at both ends, particularly women who are, leading these multiple lives, right? They're entrepreneurs or they're professionals and they're working all day, but yet they're still trying to, serve that other role that's expected of them, being mothers, being spouses, being home, caretakers of elderly people. I mean, there's just so many roles that a woman is expected to do. It's very unrealistic, I think, in today's modern world. It's very hard to navigate. And when they're young, in their 20s, let's say, they have so much metabolic reserve and resiliency that they can pull it off. But they start getting into their 30s, mid-30s, and approaching 40, and things start changing in a hurry, and they start having a lot of problems that they never had before, including, never really feeling vital and refreshed, difficulty sleeping, anxiety, things like that. And some of them go on to develop, associated with that, a lot of, gut problems, constipation, gas, bloating, diarrhea, things that would be diagnosed as IBS. But also many of them, unfortunately, go on to develop chronic pain, achiness all over the body. And that's when you get into that realm of potentially fibromyalgia. But I think in today's discussion, we'll talk about some things that are common to look at and to assess when people just have ongoing fatigue, whether or not they have fibromyalgia or not.
Okay, so then really quickly, what is fibromyalgia? Just so that those people out there who are like, what is this term? They have a clear delineation between our conversation around fatigue and fibromyalgia.
Well, fibromyalgia is a medical disorder or entity with a formal diagnostic criteria and diagnosis code and all of that. But it really is used as a descriptor for a patient who is almost always female, high 90 percentile females with the disorder. And there's some hypotheses on why that may be, although we don't know for sure. But it's a patient who has a multitude of symptoms that make up this syndrome, with the most prominent symptom being what's called global pain or global achiness. They basically feel achy or painful all over the body, not just their neck hurts or their pelvic area and their low back hurts and their neck hurts. It's literally a perception of achiness or pain all over the body. Mainly, the perception of pain is in the softer somatic tissue, the soft somatic tissue, so like muscles, tendons, ligaments, fascia. It's not joint pain, for instance. It's not arthritis. It's more pain and achiness, which most patients would say, oh, it's in my muscles, okay? Hence the term fibromyalgia, fibro meaning fibrous, pliable tissues, not hard tissues like bone and joints. And algia means pain. So fibromyalgia just means pain in these softer tissues. But those patients don't just have pain if they really have fibromyalgia. They have almost universally have significant fatigue. They often have some level of depression and or anxiety, sometimes overt panic disorder. They have sort of a racing mind that does not let them get to sleep easy. And when they do get to sleep, they may sleep 12, 14 hours, but they wake up feeling like they never slept. They're basically unrefreshed or unrestored from sleep. They could commonly have headache. But they very often have those gut symptoms I talked about as well. So it's a constellation of things that all need to sort of line up for a diagnosis to be properly made, although The diagnosis is given out willy-nilly, particularly to women who go in and complain to their doctor, I have some pain and I'm tired. Well, you know, we know from very well-controlled studies that even when physicians, these are family physicians, internal medicine doctors, and even rheumatologists, unfortunately, when they diagnose someone with fibromyalgia, if those patients are then sent to sort of an expert panel of highly trained doctors in fibromyalgia, the diagnosis is corroborated or verified in only about 34% of the patients. So about one third of them get an accurate diagnosis, which if you flip that upside down, it means two thirds get an inaccurate diagnosis and inappropriately get labeled as a fibromyalgia patient. And unfortunately, they're often put on the medications for fibromyalgia, which are, you know, repurposed, retreaded antidepressants or antiepileptics with a whole boatload of side effects. And if you don't really have fibromyalgia, they have no hope of making you any better, but they have a strong predilection of giving you side effects that make you feel worse. And unfortunately, even if you do truly have fibromyalgia, which we call classic fibromyalgia, those drugs don't necessarily work that well even then.
And as you're describing this scenario, you know, viewing this through a clinical lens, I almost feel like it's the anti-restoration system or syndrome. It's that classic case of this person who comes in whose whole body is in hyperdrive, and they can never access those restorative moments in life, the appropriate sleep, the downtime, and you know, I read in your book, the FibroFix, you talked about this woman, Carol, in her 30s, and she had global pain, she had fatigue, she had brain fog, she had IBS. What is the story that you see of people who are coming in with a diagnosis of fibromyalgia? Because I'm venturing to guess it's rarely like, I was totally cool, and then all of a sudden I have pain everywhere.
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And even, you know, when you started first asking it, you know, what makes this different? You know, these patients don't all of a sudden have this overnight. What's unique about them? And that is a very good question. And we're just starting to really understand it. I think you said something like you never can access those restorative moments in life. That's a great way to look at it, because that's exactly what is going on. Even when these patients sleep, or even when they do things that to a normal person would be relaxing or restorative, their nervous system is locked in a mode where they don't get the restoration out of it. Their nervous system can never relax, essentially. And what fibromyalgia is one of a group of disorders that we now call central sensitivity disorders, meaning the whole central nervous system is overly sensitive. And some people refer to them, and I think aptly so, as hypervigilance disorders, meaning the nervous system is always hypervigilant. It's always on guard. It's in a mode of fight or flight, right? Like you're under threat. It's the kind of mode that our nervous systems would all get into, hopefully, if we were really facing a significant threat, right? If we were being attacked, or if we look and we're about to walk off a curb and we see a bus coming at us. I mean, we go into like this hyper, you know, acute mode to try to defend ourselves. And that these people's nervous systems seem to be almost locked in some level of that and never shuts off. And it doesn't let them go into the deep delta wave restorative sleep pattern. So they have a very distinctive sleep dysfunction that helps us diagnose the condition. Now, what predisposes someone to this? We do know that there's an extremely high correlation between early life traumatic events or stressful events, or what are called ACEs, adverse childhood events. And this could be overt abuse, sexual abuse, certainly, but even verbal abuse, physical abuse during early life. But it could be being a product of a very tumultuous sort of environment when you're young and your nervous system sort of is in that pliable learning mode on how it learns to deal with its world. So if you have, let's say, an alcoholic father who's yelling all the time or abusing, you know, your mother, or if you, you know, have some other situation where you just patently don't feel safe or under threat, or you're moving all the time, or whatever it may be, If you're not in a safe, loving, grounded place, it affects the nervous system while you're maturing, and your nervous system is learning how to cope with the world. And it can get locked in unhealthy patterns, if you will. And for some reason that we don't quite understand, females in that kind of environment are more likely to go on to develop long-term dysfunction because of that, which manifests later in life, particularly if they're stressed again. Let's say they're abused again, or they have some other stressful event, a surgery or a trauma, or just a lot of, you know, compounded daily stress from a very chaotic life. They can go on to develop things like irritable bowel syndrome, anxiety and panic attacks, and insomnia. But one of the most common disorders they may develop is actually fibromyalgia. Now, males can be in the same scenario when they're growing up. They do not tend to develop those types of disorders I just talked about. They tend to develop other types of manifestations of the dysfunction. They tend to develop into adult men who are very easy to anger, very easy to frustrate, often lash out, you know, by yelling, screaming, maybe even, you know, physical abuse. If they were abused, they tend to be repeat abusers in the same way that they were abused, unfortunately. So they lash out in probably even more destructive ways. You know, they're often doing things that are sort of somewhat destructive to the people around them, where the female adaptation to that environment and stress is to sort of develop disorders that seem to be damaging to themselves. So it's just a different, and we don't understand exactly why that happens, but we certainly observe it.
Well, and it's interesting because the other lens that I'm just thinking of as you're talking is that the brain fog and the IBS and all it's such an internalization of those emotions, just in different manifestations in
the
body.
It is. And, you know, there's a great book called The Body Keeps the Score. And there's some others out there that talk about early life events and early life traumas and how they manifest in our health and or wellness or lack of it for the remainder of our life. And we're even seeing in the epidemiology world, even in the very, you know, orthodox conventional epidemiology public health world, they're starting to track, you know, what was someone's upbringing like? How much stress were they under? Where did they have overt abuse or something like that? And then they track them and they find out that they go on to develop a whole host of chronic diseases at a much higher rate than people who were not subjected to that. And they even have shorter lifespan. So it's just an emerging appreciation that the science is just starting to really look at in a systematic way.
Well, yeah. And you know, this isn't a question. It's just kind of a comment off of that, because I've been reading a lot lately about not only how does the mind somatize and turn things into a symptom in the body, but conversely, how you can use the body to change what's happening with respect to psychology or biochemistry. And there's an American author named Amy Cuddy, and she wrote a book called Presence. And in that, she talked about research where I think they were talking about women, but it doesn't really matter because I think they've seen this in both genders, that if you assume, I'm going to say the superwoman pose, you know, hands on your hips and broad shoulders and feet apart and like that stance of confidence, they find that within a 20-minute to 2-hour time span, testosterone levels go up and cortisol levels go down. And so literally assuming a position and posture has that capacity to influence the body. So, and you know, with your background from a chiropractic perspective, like it's an interesting lens. So I guess, you know, segueing to a question from that, there's always things you can take and we can clean up your diet, but are there other things outside that realm that when you're caring for patients, you're like, look, here's your diet, here are your supplements, here are your other pieces, but here are the other things you're going to do. What are the other things that you give people to do to really start to retrain their body and mind and a sense of wellness?
Once again, great question. And that's fascinating research, you know, and, you know, in all my medical and functional medicine training and all deep in the weeds in, you know, biochemistry and enzymatic reactions and receptor function and everything else, you know, sometimes I've myself forgotten to remember all the things I learned back in physical medicine about how structure dictates function, you know, how we carry ourselves, our posture, how we breathe, you know, how we move and use our bodies, how that really is integrally connected to the nervous system and the brain and the holographic kind of nature of our being, if you will. So You're very right. And like in my book, The FibroFix, we give people progressions or steps through not only determining do they really have this thing called fibromyalgia or do they have maybe one of the other things that commonly get misdiagnosed and try to guide them down the right pathway accordingly. But, you know, when we're looking at trying to bring people out of this scenario, it's not just, you're right, it's not fixed with a pill, whether that pill's a drug or a supplement or, you know, things can be, medications can be helpful at times if the patient is selected right. And certainly there's a whole host of different nutraceuticals, botanicals, and supplements and things that can be extremely helpful along the way. But you can't just attack it from a biochemistry side. You really have to go into the mind, the spiritual side, but you have to go into the physical side as well. And that's why we have a lot of specific safe methods outlined with pictures and how to do it and all of that to how to start moving again, regaining motion and flexibility and range of motion in the body is exceedingly important while at the same time not overexerting yourself so you make yourself feel worse. But you absolutely have to get moving again and getting the body moving through space because that tells the brain things that are good for healing. And at the same time, we have to look at a lot of practices and, you know, in modern medicine, they'll group them together as CBT or cognitive behavioral therapies. We'll pick from those depending on the person and what resonates with them. It could be a daily practice of deep breathing or guided imagery, or it could be meditation, or it could be a form of yoga that's not exertional and that they can handle. It could be prayer. It could be biofeedback. It could be heart rate variability training on their iPhone. You know, I mean, there's a lot of different things that we have tools now to do it, but you have to hit it from the physical side, the spiritual, mental side, and the biochemical side. And if you don't put it all together, they rarely truly recover.
Yeah. And you mentioned something really cool there when you were listing out some of the options. And I think it's probably something not a lot of people have heard of, and that's HRV or heart rate variability. Yeah. Can you just talk briefly about what that is? Because I think that's a tool that more people can access. And again, I feel like it's this sort of superwoman, superhuman tool you can use to really have more control over your physical body.
Yeah. You know, now we have so many biometric kind of devices or options open to us that we can train patients to use. We used to have all of this stuff in office, you know, real-time EEG and biofeedback and training yourself to have healthier, more calming brain waves, heart rate variability. But these were things that you had to come into the office and get hooked up to machines and stuff and computers to, in you know, get the benefit of. And sometimes we still do that in the beginning to help, you know, more step-by-step train somebody, but we try to get them non-dependent on the provider and coming to the office as quickly as possible. And now there's things that you can, software that and apps you can put on your iPhone or your iPad or your laptop with little sensor devices where you can do things like biofeedback and try to retrain your brainwaves. But heart rate variability is one of the wonderful technologies that has branched off in this option as well. And basically, long story short, if you asked most people, do you think your heart should be very regular in the way it beats, or should it have an unpredictability to it or a variability to it? Most people would say, I want it to be very predictable and, you know, be very static in how it behaves. That's actually shown not to be healthy. A heart that is shown to have adaptability and variability based on the circumstances and demand is actually a much healthier heart. Now, we don't mean someone with a, you know, a medical arrhythmia or something like that, so it's very unstable. We're just talking about sort of a flexibility or a pliability of your cardiovascular system to meet the demands that you're under at that time. And we can monitor that, and we can actually train the person sort of like biofeedback to make their heart rate more variable within a healthy spectrum. And it actually is a sort of surrogate marker of a healthy nervous system, on how it behaves, particularly how it confronts stressors, and that it actually deals with them in a constructive, healthy way and not an aberrant way that can lead to dysfunction.
Yeah, I think the opportunity to monitor this and engage in biofeedback is so interesting. And HeartMath is a company that has some interesting devices for that.
Yeah, that's what I use. Excellent.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. and the Muse is another one. And have you used the Muse before?
I've not. No.
Yeah. So this is a band that goes on your over your forehead, and it measures alpha and theta waves in the brain to give you biofeedback related to meditation. And it's a Canadian technology, actually, but it's another really interesting tool because we kind of think, one, people go, oh, I don't want to meditate. It's got a bad PR history. Right. And two, they gamify it. So you get these birds if you're calm enough. I'll put some links in our show notes because it's a really neat gateway tool for people. Dr. Brady, if we're talking about energy and how we access it, if we go really myopic for a few minutes and like get really deep into the cell, we're really talking about the mitochondria. This is the little powerhouse, the power station in the cells to actually produce energy. Yeah. Why is this little organelle just so darn important and so frequently overlooked when we're talking about energy as a society in general?
Oh, I don't know. I think because it's complicated and people like things real easy. And even with physicians, unfortunately, and I'm the exception I'll make here is functional medicine physicians, because they're all about the mitochondria most of the time, sometimes, you know, to the opposite extreme. But most physicians, you know, they learned energy biochemistry and mitochondrial function back in, you know, under pre-med and then in med school again. And then they took the test and promptly forgot it because it's complicated and they hated it when they learned it. But, you know, I learned very quickly when, luckily, you know, almost 30 years ago, I found functional medicine and really high level integrative clinical nutrition, where you have to understand all of these pathways, and energy metabolism is of prime importance, because without energy, or these little energy currency chemical structures, you know, like ATP, the body doesn't run. I mean, energy is life, right? So if the mitochondria are not working and you're not making energy very efficiently from the macronutrients in your diet, you will not be healthy. And now we know that dysfunction of the mitochondria is associated with virtually every chronic disease known to man, whether it's cardiovascular disease, cancer, you know, you name it, it's a player. But one of the first manifestations of poorly functioning mitochondria is fatigue, because they are the energy power plants of the cell. Now, in functional medicine, we really understand this, and the mitochondria are of prime importance to be assessed in anybody who has profound fatigue and is chronically ill. However, I have found that functional medicine docs, just like most docs, if you ask them, you know, what is fibromyalgia? They'll say, oh, it's a muscle problem. It's not a muscle problem. It's way bigger than that. If you have a muscle problem, you don't have fibromyalgia. You have a muscle problem. You have myofascial pain syndrome or some other kind of problem. But if you ask most functional medicine doctors what is fibromyalgia at its core, they'll say it's mitochondrial dysfunction. Because if your mitochondria are not working right, you'll be fatigued, and the aberrant energy metabolism will make you make a bunch of acidic waste products, like people know of lactic acid, when they overexercise, and it'll make the muscles achy. However, we know from the fibromyalgia literature, they've looked at this extensively, and patients with true global fibromyalgia, the reason they have their symptoms is not because of mitochondrial downregulation. They may have some of that concomitantly because it's very common, but it's not at the core of why they have the global pain perception issues and the central sensitivity issues that they have. It's just not. But it is something to look at. And in someone with profound ongoing fatigue, it is one of the first things we do. You know, of course, we're looking in blood work at things like iron status and ferritin levels, and do they have a viral infection? Do they have Epstein-Barr virus, cytomegalovirus, all those things that you need to do. We'll look at their thyroid function, because that's exceedingly important, particularly in females, to look at the thyroid in a very granular way, because that's sort of the volume control on your energy production and everything else in your biochemistry. So if the thyroid is not optimized, even if the mitochondria are capable of behaving very well, they will be essentially being told not to run at a high enough level. But we can assess mitochondrial function really well now with something called an organic acid test. And to me, it is the sort of baseline triage test in functional integrative medicine or nutritional medicine, just like a blood chemistry or a CBC or something like that would be in standard diagnostic medicine.
Yeah, I really love running those organic acid tests. And frankly, I really like having conversations with people when they're starting to get tired about the different areas that we can assess and support, because I'm sure you see this with your patients. People are tired and then they assume they have a deficiency in coffee, so they upregulate that. And then they assume they have a deficiency in sugar, so they upregulate that. And basically, you know, they're destroying their mitochondria, they're destroying yep. their adrenals, they're destroying all of these pathways that were screaming out for help in the first place.
Now, the vast majority of my patient base is actually female. And when they come in complaining of fatigue, I find that if you get them off the stimulants, if you have them take a reasonable look at their lifestyle and try to reduce some of the things that are stacking up on them, that they're just trying to be too many things to too many people often, that they need to slow it down a little bit. They need to prioritize their own existence and health. They need to start doing things that are fun for them and some recreational things that are about them, not everybody else around them. But from the metabolic side, if we take a look at in a very granular way and optimize a couple of things, one is their iron status, two is their thyroid function, and three is their mitochondrial function. And it doesn't take a tremendous amount of sophisticated, expensive testing to do this. And we intervene the right way, whether it's with lifestyle changes, dietary changes, but often, you know, very targeted supplementation, we can usually turn them around very, very quickly. I mean, it doesn't take long. If you pull the right levers, things start changing very quickly. You just need someone who really knows how to do it.
Yeah. And my message feeding off of that to people who are listening is set a new standard for yourself. Don't wait till you are so sick and downstream and drowning to reach out for help. Like, hit this before the problem's out of control.
Yeah, the quicker you start dealing with it, the easier it is to turn around. I mean, obviously. And just keep in mind, you know, you don't have to be super sick to turn to these things, because the things I just mentioned are, you know, organic acid analysis, optimizing mitochondrial function, looking at some of the key neurotransmitter metabolites on organic acid, optimizing energy function with iron status and thyroid function. This is the first thing they do on Olympic athletes. You know, these are some of the healthiest, you know, most highest performing humans on the planet. And this is what the doctors who are treating them do. Now, we turn to it often when people are just broken down. You know, we use it to rebuild people who are chronically ill, but you can use these same approaches to fine tune an elite athlete to get just 5% more, you know, energy or power out of them, which often is the difference between a gold medal and not being, you know, even qualifying. They're on a razor edge at that level. So I like to say with a tool like organic acids, for instance, and targeted supplementation based on the results, you can use that to rebuild a blown engine in an old car, or you can use it to fine tune a Formula One race car. It really runs that spectrum. So the more proactive you are about your health, particularly if you are a high achiever and you're kind of putting the pedal to the metal, this is going to help you do that.
Right. And the women listening, I call them badass superhero women. Like, these are women who are on a mission. Are there things, really simple things, that they can incorporate daily that are going to be beneficial in terms of optimizing those energy things? Not things they can take or investigations they can do, but like three quick habits that they can incorporate on a daily basis.
Well, by far the biggest thing is to make sure they get adequate and predictable sleep. It's all about sleep hygiene. It's, you know, the body wants a very predictable sleep cycle. It wants a circadian rhythm that is consistent. And in my experience, and, you know, certainly not only my experience, we always do better when we respect the normal light dark cycles of our environment, because that's how we evolved. So, you know, really, ideally, you should be winding down, getting off the electronics late at night, you know, not a lot of blue light coming at you from LED screens and things like that. After 8 o'clock at night or so, you really should start doing calming things, not super stimulating things like getting off the electronics. We even do some things with changing the light bulbs or light fixtures in people's rooms that they are in the evening, that will block out some of the blue light. If they have to be on electronics, we put apps or software on their devices to take the blue light out of the screen. That all helps them get to sleep, making sure they have a dark, quiet, relaxing place to sleep. They're not being disturbed by noises, pets, things like that. And that they get to bed, you know, 10 o'clock or so, between 10 and 11 o'clock at night. And don't be a night owl and then get up early too. You just can't maintain that, particularly as you get older. So going to bed at a reasonable time, getting up and being in sunlight early in the morning, making sure you have protein at breakfast, not just carbohydrates and caffeine, trying to not rely on the stimulants. Don't make your weekend sleep schedule radically different than your during the week schedule. So I think the biggest thing that's creating a lot of the fatigue and even chronic illness in our modern world is not enough sleep and lack of quality sleep in individuals. So if that's the one thing I can say, better sleep, protein in the morning, and just high quality foods all the time. Always pay attention to what you're putting in your mouth. It should be real food, not science food, food that you could have gotten that form 100 years ago. And you'll be a lot healthier.
Dr. Brady, how would you define health?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I think that you have obviously absence of disease, but beyond absence of an overt disease, that you have the energy and the vitality to live the life that you want to live and to do the things you want to do without restriction, with an obvious titration on what the expectations are based on your age. I mean, you know, an 80-year-old who's exceedingly healthy is still not going to have the level of ability and stamina and be able to do things that a 20-year-old can't. So we have to understand that. But within that context, you know, we shouldn't be really restricted by things like I'm tired all the time. Or I hurt all over. You know, that's ideally not the way we want to live a healthy life.
I love that answer. Each month, I'm featuring a new Anthropology quiz to help you unlock and uncover some of the physical performance blocks that may be holding you back from your true potential. This month, the quiz is exploring sleep. Besides digestion, sleep is one of the most fundamental things we need to be able to do as living beings, and we have historically undervalued this time of recovery to be able to keep us in peak performance. No longer is it about how many hours a day can you hustle, but it's really about how effectively can you sleep and recover. I want to know whether or not you are sleeping and recovering the way you should be. To learn more or to take the quiz, head on over to meganwalker.com/anthropology quiz. We have just a few questions left, and this is the second but quick part of the interview, and I call it key performance indicators. So when we have a startup, we call them KPIs, these things that we're looking at to give us a sense of the health of a company or a new initiative. But I think these things relate to our health as well. So I've got five quick questions for you. You have not seen these, and okay. I would love just your immediate response to them. They're not hard. You'll be totally fine.
Okay.
The first one is, do you have a consistent morning routine? And if so, can you share it?
I do. I get up at the same time every day, whether it's the weekday or weekend, like I said before. And I'm very particular about my first food intake of the day, that it's macronutrient balanced and I have enough lean protein in that first meal to offset any carbohydrates or anything else that that I have going on. And I do not immediately get on my device or email. I usually wait at least an hour before I start dealing with that junk.
Good advice. Fiction or nonfiction, what are you reading right now?
Nonfiction. I tend to be a bit of a history buff, so I'm reading, I'm actually reading an excellent book on all of the behind the scenes nuances that went into the political relationships, and the relationships between countries during the Cold War, and particularly through and right after World War II. All the stuff we didn't learn about why things happened, that we never learned in school.
Right. Upstream. This is a theme. Hot beverage of choice. What is it and how do you prepare it?
Oh, I have to admit, it is really, really high quality, dark, very rich black coffee. Made sort of in the Italian way with the high pressure infusion. It's hard to beat. I think that's, I don't abuse it, but it's one of those substances, like, to me, like really, really good quality dark chocolate, organic dark chocolate. They're two like divine substances that were put on our planet with some sort of intention, I think.
I agree. And when you're healthy enough, you can enjoy it.
And exactly.
What do you do for fun or play?
Oh, lots of things. I'm a car guy. I rebuild and restore old cars, performance cars, and then drive them like I stole them. And I'm a musician. I was a touring rock and roll musician before I ever went into engineering or into healthcare. So I play music, all kinds of different instruments, and that's what. And I hang out with my young boys and play sports with them and golf and baseball and all kinds of stuff. So.
Great. And last question for you. Entrepreneurism, are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
Oh, I think there's an innate ability toward entrepreneurship that some people just have. And unfortunately, other people don't. I'm not saying you can't learn it and you can't, you know, learn skills and best practices of it. But in my experience on this planet, there are just those natural entrepreneurs that it just really comes natural. And then there's those people that it's a real struggle for them. So,
Dr. Breda, you are up to so much. Your book, The Fibro Fix, is a really great manual and starting point for people who are managing chronic pain and fatigue. I know people are going to want to follow up with you. Where can they find you to learn more about what you're up to?
Sure. Well, my main professional website is just drdavidbrady.com, drdavidbrady.com. It has all kinds of great, you know, resources on there, articles, lectures of mine on different health topics. And there's links out to the FibroFix and books and all. But if they want to actually learn directly about the book, they can just go to FibroFix.com, FibroFix.com.
Fantastic. And we'll have all of that available in our show notes. Dr. Breda, thank you so much for your time. I know you have a really busy day ahead of you.
Great. Thank you. It was a lot of fun.
If you enjoyed our conversation and would like to hear more, head on over to Stitcher or iTunes and subscribe to the Entrepology Podcast. We would also really appreciate a quick review. When people have their health, they can change the world. Let us keep you healthy and you go change the world.